So I'll seriously abbreviate this joke about the chap who went for a job to the safari park. As I say, I'll abbreviate it. This is the day after. He's been for the job. He's loading loads of cock-ups. The manager's walking round. He goes into the birdhouse. And there are a lot of finches. And they're on the floor, dead. Why? Because the idiot he took on, the gentleman he employed, had left the lights on and he'd not put the heating on. So the birds, confused by too much light and lack of heating as well, perished. So, for the purposes of this joke, the manager, on this occasion, is walking round with a sack. He picks the sack up and puts the finches in. Carries on. He goes to where the chimpanzees are. Notices that one of the gates has been left open and two rival groups of chimp have been fighting and a couple unfortunately have been killed. Dear, dear, says the man, quite impassionately. You can tell he's more bothered about money than he is about the animals. But anyway, he thinks, I'd better move these. And he goes in, risking life and limb, while he got out the two dead chimpanzees and put them in this quite roomy sack, which was similar to the wardrobe in the Narnia tale. So anyway, he carries on. And now, he goes to where they keep bees. I've never been to a wildlife place that keeps bees. Anyway, I don't like these things anyway. But yes, the bees and the elephants have apparently not got on. The elephants have gone on the rampage, trodden and flattened all the bees. So, he's also, for the purposes of this joke, got a brush and shovel. What kind of manager is he at all? He did have a suit and a tie on. So anyway, scrapes the dead bees up, and they go in the sack as well. And he goes past the lion enclosure. He says, I think I'd better throw this sack full of these things over into the lion enclosure. Why, says he, because it's part of the joke, and if I don't, the rather terrible punchline that's coming up just won't work. So, we jump forward to the day after a new lion comes. Oh, incidentally, the bloke did get sacked for negligence of the animals. Nice one. He's undergoing investigations too, but believe that, that's for another joke. So, yeah, the day after again, there's a new lion there, says to the other lions, he says, what's it like here? And they say, oh, it's pretty good. Is it? Yeah. Said, the food's particularly good. I said, yes. He says, what's it like? He said, well, yesterday, for example, we had finch, chimps, and mushy bees. Got to be a terrible, terrible joke, that. Just wasted 3 minutes of your time. It is slightly bird-related, which tells you that you're listening to Bird Pod. Hello, and you're listening to Bird Pod, the weekly bird-watching podcast. Written and presented by me, Neil Baxter. If you want more information about BirdPod, check out the official BirdPod website at www.birdpod.webs.com. This week, no, we're not going to concentrate on the mushy bees or the chimps, but it is about finches, specifically the green finch, which sounds like this. That, again, is the artificial bird of the week, the green finch. It's the Audubon musical bird toy, available from the RSPB. If you want a link way to get one of these from the RSPB shop, links available on my website, which is www.birdpod.webs.com. Okay, anyway, before we talk a little bit more about the green finch, firstly, it's birding news, which, as you know, is where I found interesting stories, well, that I found interesting, bird-related on the internet. This from the Independent's website. Wednesday the 3rd of June 2009, giant bird breeds in Britain for first time in 177 years. The world's heaviest flying bird, the globally threatened great bustard, has bred successfully in Britain for the first time since 1832. 5 years into a reintroduction programme which has brought young birds from southern Russia, where the species is relatively plentiful, a female produced two chicks last week at a secret site on Salisbury Plain in Wiltshire. Their birth is a conservation success story on a pair with the return of the sea eagle to the west coast of Scotland, bringing back to the UK one of Europe's most charismatic and unmistakable creatures. The turkey-sized males can reach nearly 50 pounds in weight. Once common on extensive grassland from southwest England to the Scottish borders, Otis tarda was a bird which was so remarkable in its mammoth size and bold plumage that it impressed itself deeply on rural culture. It still sits on the coat of arms of Wiltshire and Cambridge County Councils. There are still two pubs called the Bustard, one in Wiltshire and one in Lincolnshire. There is a beer called Great Bustard, part of the Stonehenge Ales range. The bird is the badge of Wiltshire Girl Guides, and it is the badge of the Royal School of Artillery on Salisbury Plain. But it was such a visible and tempting target for hunters and egg collectors that it was gradually driven to extinction 177 years ago, when the last female with a chick was observed in Suffolk. Now, there are thought to be no more than 32,000 birds in Europe, with two centres of population, one in Spain and Portugal, and the other in Russia. The Russian chicks brought to Britain have come from the Saratov area on the Volga, 800 miles south of Moscow, from eggs in nests which otherwise would have been destroyed by farmers. Organised by the charity The Great Bustard Group, the programme has each autumn released between 6 and 32 young birds onto Salisbury Plain. Eggs from clutches in 2007 and 2008 were infertile, probably because of the young age of the males. Last month, a female bird was observed incubating a clutch of eggs. A few days ago, they hatched and two chicks were seen following their mother and being fed. David Waters, a former Wiltshire policeman who founded the Great Bustard Group, said, "I'm exhausted and nearly broke, but to see Great Bustards breeding after an absence of 177 years is brilliant." Okay, next up, this is from Cranswick Today website, 5th of June 2009. RSPB News, garden birds need your help in constant battle to feed chicks. With the breeding season in full swing, the RSPB is reminding people just how grueling it can be for birds to keep their chicks alive. And the wildlife charity wants to make sure we know how important we can be in making the daily battle to find food that bit easier. A young blue tit, for example, needs up to 100 caterpillars each day to survive. This means hundreds of flights back and forth for the adult bird, finding insects and feeding them to the young. And with some tit species producing broods of up to 10 youngsters, this means adult birds would need to find 1,000 caterpillars every day. Robin chicks are equally demanding, needing around 40 meals every single day. And with robins laying up to 9 eggs, the adult will need to find a lot of worms and other insects. An adult swift can eat as many as 40,000 flying insects each day, and will need even more to feed to their young as well at this time of year. Ian Kendall, who works at the RSPB's Bempton Cliffs Reserve near Bridlington and Scarborough, said, "Most people notice a flurry of activity among their garden birds in the breeding season, but I don't think anyone realises just how busy they are. To think that one pair of tiny birds like blue tits might need to find up to 1,000 caterpillars every single day is astonishing. It means a lot of flying back and forth, and the amount of energy used up in the constant search for food is incredible. This is where we can help by continuing to put out food and water during the breeding season. Having it regularly available in a known spot could save at least a few journeys for garden birds and could seriously conserve energy levels. When we watch all the birds in our garden at Bempton Cliffs, it's mind-boggling to imagine how many insects they need to collect every single day, but it emphasises how important our feeders are and how crucial it is that we keep them regularly stocked. Lawns, plants and trees are home to thousands of bugs and insects. Although we might want our gardens to look neat and tidy for all those barbecues, we urge people to leave them a little more scruffy. Think of the country cottage style rather than manicured lawns and topiary bushes. The RSPB's top tips on gardening for wildlife this summer include: don't cut grass too short. Longer grass attracts insects and lawn plants like daisies. Provide nectar for hoverflies, bees, butterflies and moths. Try to have something in flower for most of the year. Always use peat-free compost. Choose tubs of different shapes, heights and sizes in groups. This mimics the variation found in nature. Create a water feature. This can be anything from a pond to an old sink and is vital for both drinking and bathing. Make an insect stack. Instead of disposing of old logs, sticks and wood, pile it up in a corner to attract all sorts of insects. For more information on gardening for wildlife, visit www.rspb.org.uk/HFW. Hey, do you know, I've been dying to say /for ages. You know, when you see it on the news programmes on television. Yeah, sad life. Okay, the last story, this is from an Indian website, it would seem. Let me see, expressbuzz.com. But it's part of the New Indian Express Group. Interesting little bit of a legend of folklore, which I always like. The Unseen Bird of Bad Omen. This 7th of June, today actually. Alapuza. The bird has a name, but seldom has anyone seen it. And people in the rural areas here, especially in the Kuttanad and Thaniam Mukom areas, do believe that it exists and brings death. The bird, which is known by different names like Kuvakadan and Kolikoravan, is believed to be a harbinger of death. Almost all the people in the rural areas here believe that if this bird cries, somebody will die the next day in the nearby area. However, ornithologists are not ready to agree with this opinion. 90-year-old Barathi, a native of Thaniam Mukom, said that since her childhood she had been experiencing many things related to this bird. Whenever this bird, called Kuvakadan, in our village cries, it is sure that someone will die in our area. The bird comes and sits on a tree in front of our house at night and cries loudly, which creates fear in our minds. So we firmly believe the sound of this bird will bring bad omen to us. Though I am now 90, I have not seen this bird till late, she said. Justin, a farmer of Kuttanad and a religious teacher, said that the majority of people in Kuttanad believed that the bird was a death symbol. In this week too, I had an experience where a person from our area died in an accident a day after I heard the sound of this bird. Now many youths, including me, have recorded the sound of this bird on our mobile phones and are using it as a ringtone, he said. 25-year-old Salim Kumar and 40-year-old George said that though they were not ready to believe many of the superstitions existing in the village, they were not ready to ignore the beliefs related to this bird. Though earlier we had ignored the words of our elders about this bird, later through our own experiences we understood that their words were not wrong, they said. Victor, a houseboat operator in Alapuza, said that even some foreigners firmly believe that this bird is a harbinger of death. Ingrid Barabur, a lady from Austria who lived in Alapuza for 3 years, firmly believed that this bird will bring evil things to the people if it cries, Victor said. However, Kerala State Biodiversity Chairman V.S. Vijayan, also a Northern mythologist, said it was fish owl. It is a kind of owl that creates a loud sound. The belief of the people that fish owl is a harbinger of death is baseless. The bird is very common in all the parts of the state, he said. Interesting little story, that. I'm not sure what type of bird it is, and I've never seen one. Obviously, if you believe in that kind of thing, it must be frightening to you. So, yeah, so there we are. That's birding news for this week. So, here we go, back with the greenfinch. Let's have another blast of this. My particular interest in mentioning this bird for this week is because last week we had a greenfinch in our garden for the very first time, first visit. And this week, my wife pointed out to me that there were three of them. This was yesterday, in fact. We've got various feeders in the garden, but one in particular is attached to the wall, and let me see, what does it have? There's one dispensing peanuts, the middle one just wild bird seed, and the one underneath for dispensing black sunflower seeds. Now, the parent here, the male of the birds, was going to the sunflower seed one, and the two youngsters were on the branches below because we've got some Russian vine growing. So they were sat on that. And what the dad was doing was dehusking the actual sunflower seeds and chucking the innards down to the birds underneath. Because at first, you know, you think, ah, is that a coincidence? No, it's not. It was a great feeding method, watching this bird, you know, cracking at the outer shell with a beak and then dropping them underneath and the other birds are eating it. I managed to get a couple of photographs, which I shall have to upload and put on the website soon. Again, just great to see this, because all birds are welcome in my garden. Only recently we had starlings. You may remember a couple of weeks ago I did a podcast on that. But anyway, yep, so the greenfinch, which sounds like... Or does it? Now, the ear is where we can put it to the test. That's the Audubon musical bird toy. How accurate is that? Well, let's press it one more time, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the bird identifier on the RSPB website, and we can compare. So that's the toy. This is an actual live recording. Well, pretty good when you think about it. Not bad at all. Okay, anyway, a little bit of information about the greenfinch. The greenfinch, whose Latin name is Carduelis chloris. Overview, its twittering and wheezing song and flash of yellow and green as it flies make this finch a truly colourful character. Nesting in a garden conifer or feasting on black sunflower seeds, it is a popular garden visitor, able to take advantage of food in town and city gardens at a time when intensive agriculture has deprived it of many weed seeds in the countryside. Although quite sociable, they may squabble among themselves or with other birds at the bird table. Where to see them? A common countryside bird found in woods and hedges, but mostly found close to man on farmland and in parks, town and village gardens and orchards. Only absent from upland areas without trees and bushes. When to see them, all year round, what they eat, seeds and insects. UK breeding, which is the number of birds breeding annually, 734,000 territories. So there we are, brief, but that was the greenfinch. Before I go, last little bit of news is, I've mentioned before on these podcasts that I've not been bird watching for too long. How long? Well, in fact, it's 1 year ago today when I first decided to seriously take an interest in this and start looking at things more in detail, namely a grey wagtail seen on the River Douglas near to where I live in Wigan. So prior to that, I've just been a casual observer. Now, following that, more of an interest. So it stemmed from there, from books to binoculars, to DVDs, to go joining the Wildfowl and Wetland Trust and RSPB, to going out looking at birds, and finally to doing a podcast about them all, which you may have heard of. It's called Bird Pod. It's www.birdpod.webs.com. It even has an email address if anyone wanted to contact me, which is birdpod@hotmail.co.uk. And is it well worth a listen? Well, you tell me. You're listening to it now, and I hope you're enjoying it, because I enjoy making these. So, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening again. Thank you for sharing a hobby with me, which is now celebrating its first birthday. And, as I say, once more, let's play us out with the artificial bird of the week, the greenfinch. So, thanks again for listening, and see you next week.